What's up, you guys? Welcome to the Listen Bitch podcast with your host, Brandon Lynette. This is your go-to destination for unlocking your full potential and embracing the extraordinary possibilities within you. Thank you for joining me today on a journey of self-discovery and empowerment as we explore the transformative power of stepping into greatness. Come into alignment with the God-given power and the gifts unleashing your soul and learn to co-create a life that you love. As you become a creator of your own destiny, here in this podcast, you're going to find that inspiration, practical tips, and that sometimes abrasive nudge to take the leap of faith towards your dreams. You are in the right place. Buckle up so we can unleash your inner badass. You guys, I'm super excited today to bring you Dr. Katrina Mitchum, talking a little bit about a passion I can definitely relate to. So I'm literally just going to turn this over to her so she can introduce herself. And we're starting with her origin story, which I think is always the best place to start. So Katrina, it's all you, darling.
Thanks so much, Brandon. I am a learning designer. That's how I'm branding myself. And I got started on that path when I was in undergrad. I was a reader for a blind professor. And so I read a lot of student papers. And so I just got really interested in writing and how we come to writing. So I graduated. I went back for a master's degree in professional and technical writing because I really loved like document design and doing all those things. And then I took a class. I took a class on teaching writing, and then I got to teach and I loved it. Nice. I loved the idea of teaching writing. So I am from a blue collar background. And so it was hard for me to like make my language academic, right? And I felt like a lot of students are in higher education suffer from gatekeeping, right?
Right.
Like they're not let in if you can't speak the right words,
right?
If you can't write the right words. So I made that my thing. I taught at the community college for 11 years. I eventually made online teaching and learning my area for a few reasons. One, because they were very similar to community college students, even if they weren't at the community college, because they're the folks that are going back to school. They're right. The folks that probably had a teacher use red pen all over their paper at some point, and they decided, I'm not a good writer. I'm terrible at this. I can't write. And I feel like that steals somebody's joy in,
right,
in writing just because you don't want, need, or excel at a specific type of writing or using a specific kind of words in your writing doesn't mean that you can't write. And so I made that my thing. In teaching writing for a long time. And I also am a military spouse. And so we move every 2.85 years.
Oh, that
I did recently do the
sounds like my private hell. I still probably have boxes unpacked and I've been living here over a decade. So yeah, no.
And so online just it fit with that too. So I've been doing that since 2010, online only. I had someone who was a tenured professor tell me that I needed to come to terms with the fact that if I wanted a tenured position, I was going to need to split up my family. So if I wanted that job, that, you know, golden goose job of having tenure, which gives you a lot of protections, then I was going to need to live somewhere that was not where my spouse
where you would
was.
Be stationed. Yeah,
exactly. And so I made that decision then and there that was not
an option,
not something I'm going after. But I did, you know, I did kind of hope that there would be a full-time position, even if it wasn't on the tenure track, that would be online someday. And so I kept on. And that was my goal, trying to get a full-time online position. And that opportunity didn't come until 2017.
Nice.
So it was a long 7 years of, you know, adjuncting, cobbling things together. I was getting my PhD online.
I'm saying it in this time, because, like, you know, I've got people listening to this right now that, you know, 7 years is a long time, but you weren't just like sitting around just waiting and hoping to get lucky, right? Kind of explain to us what that 7 year looked like and kind of how you created the answers. You know, you're bringing this to you.
Yeah. I went back and got my PhD, and I did the things that I was passionate about.
Yeah.
And that was it, right? So I'm passionate about students learning how to write online. And so I did studies and I got IRB approvals and I did publishing, because those are all the things that would make you appealing to someone that was hiring full time. It makes you appealing to the tenure track, frankly, even right. though that wasn't, but making a difference, like that's why most people get into teaching.
Right.
And I knew that I wouldn't know what kind of difference I was making unless I was researching and asking my students, like, how did this go? Why did this happen? Why did you approach it like this? How did the way I designed this work for you? I asked questions like, why did you leave? So my dissertation was on retention in online writing classes. And so I wanted the perspective of the students that left. Why?
My question now, just to interject in your story here, how do you feel? Are you still currently teaching?
I am.
Okay.
Not so my in a different question, way.
Okay. We'll get there. I don't want to fast forward your story. I don't want to skip any parts, but just a quick question about how your perspective of AI today, like how, because I'm just talking, I don't teach writing. I don't read people's writing anywhere. But I started seeing all of these prompts in all of my online things about have AI write this for you. And then all of a sudden I'm on my Facebook page and I'm seeing people that don't know how to spell. They don't know the difference between there, and there, writing these like six paragraph posts now that sound nothing like who they are. I'm just like, this is a very new version of a fake world. So have you seen, is it too early for you to be able to see that reflecting in your students' work? Is this something that, you know, you're seeing? How do you feel about the AI stuff?
Yeah, so I like the phrase cautiously optimistic.
Okay,
fair. To describe it.
Yeah.
Because I think it really puts the pressure on writing instructors to, one, redefine the kinds of work we're asking students to do.
Yeah.
And two, teach them to critically like assess, what is this machine giving me, right?
Yeah.
I think AI definitely has a place. But it's about finding that balance between, like, you can train it to sound like you, right? So it's about finding
that balance.
That's
so scary. Okay.
It is a little scary. That's probably a whole other conversation.
Yeah.
But it also has value, right? So some particular tasks, you have to know what to tell it and what to ask it in order to get it to give you something that's going to be useful. Like right now, if you go into ChatGPT and you say, even if you give it some parameters, like act like a writing teacher and give me feedback on this paragraph, it's still going to be very like vanilla, very boring. It may not even be correct, right? Because the AI is trained on certain ideas of what correct is. And so we know there's bias in there, and it's pushing language toward a very particular socioeconomic class even.
Right.
And so that's why I say cautiously optimistic. So if we can like collectively learn and figure out how to make this thing work with us, then I think there's a lot of potential there. Yeah. Like my students right now, I'm teaching an introduction to research. So it's not super writing heavy, but students are doing Boolean search statements. AI is good at that. It's good at you know, logical things. It can put together a string of search terms. Yes, that is how we use it.
Cause I personally have college girls that my two college girls, I know they've messed around with AI for assignments. So, and nobody is calling it out. I mean, they were great writers before it was available. So I guess, you know, I give them credit. It's not like they were failing students and then all of a sudden used AI and had straight A's. But yeah. I know they've used it. So
Yeah, it's really the how and thinking about using it ethically.
Right.
So, yeah, cautiously optimistic.
Yes. That's amazing. What kind of teaching do you do now? Or since I interrupted your story, take us back to that, to where I interrupted.
I don't know where that is, but I'm gonna pick up somewhere.
Wing it.
So we're gonna fast forward to 2017, and I got the full-time job. So this was a 1 year contract where I have a set teaching schedule. I'm guaranteed classes, which when you're adjuncting, you're not guaranteed classes. I got to have a hand in doing some of the design. So instructional design was actually something I started back when I first started teaching online. And that was an interest that carried me through that whole time. And so I did that work, and then we had some internal administrative shifting, and I ended up doing an interim director of the online writing program position.
Okay,
So I
nice.
was running the program, and then COVID
Okay.
hit. And so I went from, a manageable workload to supporting over 150 instructors with
Wow.
frighteningly varying degrees of
Right.
digital literacy, right? We had
Yeah.
folks who struggled with attaching things to email,
Yeah.
or didn't know how to put grades in the Blackboard or whatever the learning
Yeah.
management system is. And so I did that role for, I don't know, 2, 3 years. And the workload just kept piling on.
I
Like
imagine.
setting boundaries was not was impossible. Like I set them, and then they kept getting pushed against and pushed against and pushed against. And spring of 2022 was the straw, I guess. So
Okay, fair.
I have a chronic illness, and the stress and the 80-hour work weeks were just making things worse. And then at the end of that semester, I found out that even though I was hired remotely, the institution was in a different state than me
Okay.
and had always been. I was hired out of state. But because so many people were leaving the state, they decided that you couldn't work for the institution anymore unless you were in
Unless you were
state.
there. Okay.
So my boss wrote a memo arguing to keep me, and she convinced them, because that's what we do and we
Yeah,
specialize in writing.
exactly.
But she was going to have to make that argument every single year.
Oh.
And so I made the decision that summer, so it's probably like May or June, that I needed out. I couldn't do it
Yeah.
anymore. And I stayed until January because you're going to like this, I think. So I stayed until January because I had 9 weeks of sick time. And if I left, those 9 weeks just went away.
On.
So I
Why would we
used
waste
them.
that? Yeah, exactly.
I used them. And that carried me all the way to January.
Nice.
And I, in higher education, there's a lot of talk about it being a cult. And I mean, it kind of a little bit is.
Right.
And a lot of people, I'm in a group called The Professor Is Out. It's a thousands of people who want to leave higher education.
Wow.
And one of the common themes is dealing with the loss of that identity and feeling like if I leave, then I failed,
Right.
whether they had tenure or not. And so I don't feel like I felt that as much as everyone else,
Right.
because I wasn't going after the tenure
Right.
position. I just wanted something stable,
Yeah.
slightly stable, stable as it is on the outside.
Yeah.
When I looked at my CV, so that's like an academic resume where it lists all the teaching, all the administration, all of your publications, it was 13 pages long. And
Damn.
so I had done a lot. I had done
You
enough
put in the
where,
work, right?
right? But the big realization of redefining success for myself, instead of how higher ed defines success, which is, making full professor and
Right.
being emeritus professor when you retire and all that fun stuff, was actually when I went to convert that 13 pages to a 2-page resume.
Okay.
I had been given the advice to start thinking in terms of numbers. And when I realized how many classes I had designed and how many students I had taught, I'd taught 5,000 students. That's 5,000 students that I felt like I had broken down the gate for.
Right.
Right. I was doing like completion grading. So did you do the thing? Yeah. Okay. Here's the feedback that's going to help you get better, but I'm not going to prevent you from moving on just because you're not at some arbitrary
right
stage in your writing that you're supposed to be. And always been in, you know, ask forgiveness, not permission kind of teacher. And I did that for 5,000 students. That's a lot of students. That's a lot of people.
Yeah, it is a lot.
And that I think was the moment, because I, you know, had a little bit of, well, maybe this does mean I'm not good enough. But when I did that work and realized how big of an impact I, even if it had just been 10 students, right?
Yeah.
Because exactly. Out of those 5,000, maybe not everybody loved me.
Right.
Or liked my approach. That's possible. In fact, even likely. But that, you know, that moment was it for me when I realized not just did I have the impact that I was going for,
right,
but I could actually use that to move forward. And so when I left, I am teaching, but I'm adjuncting as it was intended, is okay. What I call it, because I'm teaching one class. I'm saying no when I don't have the capacity or desire to teach it. And I'm really kind of doing it on my own terms, being in higher education on my own terms. And I pivoted so that now I am a learning design consultant. So I work with all kinds of businesses, you know, from course creators to, I have a client that's an ed tech company, to help them with designing learning in a way that actually takes the learner into account. I think okay. That is something that,
yeah,
that we don't always do. They didn't do inside higher ed sometimes, but definitely on the outside in courses I've taken and trainings that haven't really considered who's actually taking this and right. What are they trying to get out of it and how do we define success together?
That's amazing. And something you said a minute ago just about how you were feeling until you actually looked back at your history. I think, you know, I'm constantly telling people, like, it's not about looking at the past, but there is a moment in our lives, if you're not feeling like enough, if you're not feeling accomplished, that the minute you start looking back at the things you've done, and maybe we don't have, you know, an incredible 13-page, you know, resume, but I guarantee there's always something. And that something was what gave you the power to keep going. So kudos to you for being willing to get outside of the box about what society defines as success. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people, the fact that you weren't chasing tenure, that's a thing that people are going to judge on. And you were just like, zero fucks given. And I think that's
amazing.
Oh,
I was judged.
Yeah.
I was totally judged. There was a lot of, a lot of toxicity between those that have tenure and those that are not going to ever have tenure. And even after I left higher ed, folks that were not tenured, I got called a sellout because I was going to work for an ed tech company.
Yeah. I mean, a sellout because you chose family over, you know, a label on a career that I work with a lot of business owners that are kind of in the higher end, like the top of their companies. And the consistent theme is that they're fucking miserable. They have the label, they have the, you know, whatever, they're successful. They have the money, they have the rank, they have all these things that they just worked for. And once you get those things, you realize like, shit, that didn't change anything. 'Cause I'm still me and what's around us. I love that. First of all, you could tell just in, I know you guys can only hear this, but I guarantee you can see, because I'm getting that experience of being able to talk to people and see you guys on Zoom as we're recording these. Not a lot of people really do light up with their passion. And you do, you have this sense of like, you are in a good place. You radiate that joy. You have peace. Like, I love this. My question now is, what keeps you up at night? You're in a really good place. So what's the thing that just keeps you up at night?
Fiction.
Yeah, girl.
Reading is the, I am a one more chapter kind of gal.
Yes.
One more chapter that becomes the end. And so that's whenever I'm up at night, it's totally because of a book. And
I'm not allowed to take fiction upstairs to my bed anymore because I cannot. Literally, I had no sleep the other night because I'm just reading and I'm like, this is so good. I'm just going to hurry up and finish this book. And you know, it's 4 in the morning.
3 hours later.
Yeah. I'm like, okay, from now on, nonfiction only. And it's going to be some drab, boring ass person that puts me to sleep. That's it. So I love that.
Maybe I'll get there someday, but I went such a long time without reading fiction because I couldn't. Between the research and the writing and the reading student papers and the giving the feedback, there was literally no time. And so that was the first thing that I did. First thing I picked back up.
Have you kept in touch with any of your students? Is there any that stood out that you were like, oh my God, you need to just quit school and go be a writer because this is profound, you know?
I've kept in touch with students. Mostly they've reached out to me to connect on social media in various ways. And I've even had, like, recently I had a student that I had 5 or 6 years ago write me for a letter of recommendation. So it doesn't, they don't disappear.
Right. Even the ones you probably want to are still there. I imagine. So currently what you're doing now, you're working with like anyone really. Do you, query these people? Like, do you go to, you know, different companies and you're like, hey, I can help you set up, you know, a learning design for your employees so that, you know, people aren't falling through the cracks?
Yeah, it really just depends on, like, in learning design, a lot of it is going to be like proposals for contracts, because bigger companies have entire departments that do this. It's the smaller companies and the nonprofits that tend to need the help. And so sometimes it's about just building the things for them using, you know, methods I know or sound. And sometimes it's about building them a framework that they can then go use without me there. And that would be the case in, you know, any business, really, even sort of like the solo proprietor or, you know, in the coaching world, getting a course started, right? But without doing all that legwork. And so the approach is slightly different depending on what their context is. But that's also part of the point, right? It should be that way for learners too, that there's enough wiggle room in what you're doing and asking them to do, that they can, that it fits their context.
Right. I love that. So I'm going to totally change direction here because the fact that you're a military spouse, I think a lot of military spouses have, that's become their definition because you do move so much. You're not making those connections. But it seems like you've found this incredible sense of self and your own identity in what you represent. What would be your advice to someone who maybe not even in the military? I mean, I think even now I'm a stay-at-home mom and that owns me. Like, it owns me, but I knew I had to have something outside of that. So even a stay-at-home mom, what is your advice to them to find something to get outside of their current identity crisis? We'll call it a crisis.
Honing in on things that you love. Yeah. And that's hard. Like, me going from severe burnout to like the person that you just commented on seeing, right?
Yeah.
That wasn't a switch. That took work. And I was so burnt out that I couldn't even tell you what I liked. I was professor, I was wife, I was mom. I was not Trina anymore.
No good times to be had.
No, zero. And so fun was actually fun, like, for me, right? Yeah. Not fun, just the fun things that my kids like. It was the kind of fun that I like. And that took, I'm going to take a step back. So trying to figure out what I loved, I went back to, and what I was passionate about, I went back to, what am I good at? Because usually if you're good at something, it's because at some point in the past, you were passionate about that. And I made a list and then I ranked them from 1 to 10 on whether or not I actually liked them. Because just because you're good at something doesn't mean it's something that lights you up. And that list and that ranking was eye-opening. And that's what led me to learning design and allowed me to clear out the things that I didn't like, which made space for me to create more fun that I like. So my branding is kind of fun. Like, you all can hear me, but Brandon can see my crazy background, right? With the stripes going in different directions. Yep. And this says, you keep using that word. I do not think it means what you think it means. So I've got all kinds of stuff around me that I find fun.
Yeah.
And eventually my kids got on board with that. Unfortunately, like, I like arcades. And so for my birthday, we go and we do the arcade, which they're okay with. But sometimes the fun isn't something they necessarily think is the most fun.
Kids are our biggest haters. I say it all the time. Our kids are our biggest haters. That's it. That's where it starts. So if you guys are a parent right there, you can scale the internet bullies. You can handle the, you know, 10-year judgment. You can handle all of that if you can survive being a parent, because it's wild.
I am the worst mom in the multiverse, and I'm kind of proud of that button that I've got.
It happens. I your story is great. Your energy is great. How has it helped your, you know, just home life? Because you were experiencing that burnout. I guarantee that it was a domino effect, because if you do not, it's, you know, people say happy wife, happy life, but it's spouse and house, right? You have to have a happy spouse. Your house is wrecked. It doesn't matter if it's mom pissed or dad pissed. So how has coming back to that joy and, you know, putting in the work and being able to take accountability, responsibility, bringing this into your awareness of owning your, you owned your shit. How has that changed the dynamics of your family?
We are better than we were. I will say some of the things that, you know, create difficult family dynamics for us are more related to the military.
Okay. So we blame dad. It's dad's fault.
It's dad's fault. Always dad's fault. Yes. But I will say that me, like, being happier, having more fun, just being able to be silly again, because I wasn't for a few years.
Yep.
That can often break tension in ways where that tension could, like, in the past may have escalated.
Right.
To no zero screen time. That's where.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the thing that goes when your kids are 8 and 11.
Yep. I'm experiencing that. That's our life.
So I'm not sure if that answered your question.
It did. Okay. I imagine, I went through angry mom phase. My kids have trauma because of it. And it breaks my heart. There was a period where I wasn't available and, you know, you have to take responsibility for that. So how can I be the best version of myself? And that definitely calibrates and magnetizes the family to peace and calm. If you're losing your shit, if you're not happy, how can you expect anyone to be happy? So what is your advice out there now for someone listening that, you know, is going to make that list? Because I know if you're listening and you are thinking, man, I don't even know what I would like, you make the list of the things you don't like. What's your advice on their next step?
Exploring each one of the things that you do like to see whether or not it's something that you want to continue getting better at, or if you're just like happy with, oh yeah, I liked that thing. To me, that was the most, I tried on lots of hats, right? Because I like research. So I thought I was going to go into UX design at first.
Yeah.
But I tried on that hat. I didn't like the way it fit. And so I tried on something else. And learning design is the only one that really, like, I could continue talking about that for forever.
Yeah.
Passionately. Like, I really think that good learning design, it can help people change their lives, because people get into a situation where they want to learn something because they want the change. And if terrible learning design is happening, that can prevent people from changing.
Right. I know I'm trying to process learning you know, funnels and just technology. I'm not a fan. I'm one of those, like, I know how to turn on the computer. I can hit a Zoom button. I'm literally I tell you, I don't edit. I don't know how, and I don't care to learn because it's not, I'm not having a great time. So if I could just keep it simple, that's what I'm going to do. But there's things that through my industry that I have to grow and progress through. And I'm fucking miserable. Like, I'm so pissed. I'm angry. It's like an hour a day on my computer. I still don't have it figured out. I walk away and then it's every day like that same, I'm in a vicious cycle, honestly, with a love hate. So I think learning, I probably could use some learning design in my life. So if you
have helped. I think that's the other thing is that we can take ownership over our learning. Yeah. Like if we're in a situation where we're doing a training or we're taking a course and we don't know why the fuck we're doing the things they're asking us to do.
Right.
Ask, find out, like, what is the connection? And so some of that really means that you have to ask yourself.
Yeah.
Too. Like, can I see that? Is there something that's a hurdle to me specifically? But you can definitely take ownership and take charge of your own learning.
I love that. Well, the advice that Katrina gave us is that, you know, you've got to try different things. And I'll tell you guys, like, you know, I have to start on day one as a new kid in a lot of areas. And I mean, my relationship with technology is one of them. And sometimes that newness keeps you from trying the new things, right? Because you're on day one. But if it's something that really does interest you, if you have that feeling in your soul, you need to pursue it because it's a calling. And day one is always going to be uncomfortable. I don't care who you are. I don't care. You know, I guarantee Michael Jordan's first day on the court was not comfortable. It's a new team. It's a new process. And he had to get in the flow of things. Everybody's uncomfortable starting at ground zero, always. So I don't want that to be something that sways you. I want you guys to be brave and get through it. Try it anyway. Give it some time, you know, as long as it's not something you're miserable about, right? Like, I don't know. I wouldn't knit to save my life, but I'll try anything once. I'm willing to try anything once. Life is just to be able, kind of like kids with food, like try it one time. You don't like it, we don't ever make it again. But all I'm saying is try it, you know. Is that something you've done with discovering your passion? Been uncomfortable on ground zero, but knowing you just commit to it? I lost sound on you. I can't hear you for some reason. It was going great, you guys. And now she's muted. I know you can't see right now. So we're going to hang tight while she is recalibrating her audio. And this is one of those times where I can take responsibility for the fact that I don't edit the podcast. This was something that could easily be cut out. And who knows, maybe I'll grow up one day and try to reach out and discover it. But today is definitely not that day, you guys. And I think I really just messed up my own sound here. So that's not helping us here. Oh, I can hear her again. Awesome.
Now. Okay.
it's cutting out a lot though. So that's good. I think we got a lot of incredible information from you. Dr. Mitchum, thank you so much for your time. And listen, bitch, dream big. Life is too short to play small. You've got to embrace who God called you to be, own your shit, and be brave as you step into your full potential as a co-creator. Until next time, love yourself in the moment. Flawed, fantastic, and fucking beautiful. Brandon Lynette here reminding you of your potential with a side of chaos. You are in the arena. Keep on swinging. Again, thank you, Dr. Katrina, so much for your time. I guarantee you touched someone today, and I appreciate that. And thank you for sharing your passion with us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.